Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Renee Alberts. Renee Alberts' new book of poems entitled No Water was just published by Speed and Briscoe Books in 2009. Her work has appeared in the New Yinzer and Encyclopedia Destructica. She collaborates across mediums with other poets, musicians, and dancers. Alberts has organized numerous readings and events, and currently co-curates the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh's Sunday Poetry and Reading Series. Hi, Renee. How you doing?
Hi, Jan. I'm good.
It's great to have you here, especially with your brand new book. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay, so go ahead. You're going to read some poems from No Water.
That's right. Let's start in the garden. This poem is called Palm Sunday. Our yard this morning is full of wings that close and spread to map their lungs' pulse as they drink. Veiny stained glass, red as a hand held up to the sun. Unstaked, tomatoes go to vine. Cabbage whites suck nectar from their blossoms, lotuses adrift on the chaos of morning glory vines spiraling hosta spires. The cat stalks a monarch, feeding on zinnia. She folds its wings between her paws. This is how we pray here, love, with claws. This next poem is called My Ex-Father Laughs on the Freeway. It's from a cycle of poems in the book that are all my ex-father this or that. And this is the first one. My Ex-Father Laughs on the Freeway. How do they fit the houses in the store when they sell them? His Cronus teeth smiled wide in profile. Rain rendered windshield a Monet. I gripped my car seat's navy velour, tiny star pattern grid. 4 years old, I understood my stupid question was a trade-off for his laughter. Do the walls collapse in on themselves? Fold into a suitcase you pick up by its doorframe handle and carry to the next strapped-in daughter. Today a woman in the shop, browsing silver, worked a filigreed bangle over her knuckles and said, I have my father's hands. She said it with such certainty. This is called Stranger. You signed her cast and cut her meat the night you met. Woman who severed her ligament at the Reiki trigger point for repressed rage on a cloisonné vase alone at 4 a.m. Her four daughters roared shrilly down their steep green hill, small feet calloused and bee-stung, wasp's nest in their swing set, pet husky's jaws slick with groundhog blood. Each girl circled this woman, their woman, tiny teeth momentarily shut inside quiet pink caves as horizon-lipped. Each decided separately when she would speak, address you, Daddy. This poem is called Closure. My hand fogs its aura into beer glass frost. She's gone. Janice, mystic bartender, tells me, just before you fall asleep, say, I release all attachments and cut through your holding on with the sword of white light. Then she tallies another draft on my tab. This poem is called Chiasma, which is a word from genetics, in which during cellular meiosis, chiasma is the point where these subcellular things form an X and the genetic material is passed from one to the other. Chiasma. When your underground drums rattle my sternum, mirror retinas tense for a saccadic glimpse of gleam in your diurnal eyes, I circle, cracking leaves, delicate spines, lured from the forest by the loot of your movement to find in night lights the crux of your why. If I trace your breath to its cistern, crawl to you on my belly, ear pressed to your chest, tracking exhale and rasp, will I find the well that lets you sing so low? When our slick breasts heave and I lean to lick briny sheen off your sun-cooked skin, how much of what I swallow can I keep as my own to secret away in the eaves of my bones to bring out in darkness, swaddled, scaled, scalded, to growl lullabies to when I burrow alone.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the writer Renee Alberts. She's reading from her new book, entitled No Water, just published by Speed and Briscoe Books. I wanted to ask you, for those of our listeners who don't know Speed and Briscoe, who are they, and, you know?
Speed and Briscoe is a collective as well as a press they've put out. I think mine is their eighth book, and they were founded sometime in the early 90s by poet Jerome Crooks. And he and I have done we've had a lot of fun together doing a lot of poetry work. We do a lot of live shows on the radio, and we also have put together a reading series for a while. But it's been really fun to be so active in the process of the book and in promoting poetry in the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been a number of books, right? And you're gonna be involved in an event that's coming up also. Can you tell us about that? It's at your Inner Vagabond Coffee House, right?
Right. That's on Earth Day on April 22nd, and it's a debut screening and art share night to benefit the SEST Enable project. I will read poetry, and so will poet Jason Kieran, and there will also be some music and a film screening that is to do with the project.
Okay. So that's April 22nd?
Right.
And if you want more information on that, you can go to Renee Alberts' website, which is animalprayer.com, and her book No Water is also available for purchase on that website. But I want to ask you about your poems, though. I want to ask you about the sense of real life moments that occur in your poems, which I really like. Is that something that's really important to you as a writer to create a sense of the real in your work?
It is. I've always written poetry forever. But I've come into my own writing a lot, through journalism. And I don't do that any longer, but I still adhere to a lot of those ethics of really going to the sensory detail in poems and trying to set up the moment of the poem as its own event and its own structure.
Well, you have this really nice sense of imagery in your work. It's hard to talk about without the poem in front of me, but, you know, there's just this feeling of organic movement and this dreaminess in the poems that's really attractive. And when I was listening to you, I was trying to discern how much was your voice and how much is in the poem, because you have a great reading voice.
Thanks.
But it all sort of goes together in this great, you know, dreamy way. But can you talk a little bit about your sense of image, how you find these images, and maybe what you might want them to do in a poem?
Sure. Let's see. I think first I go to the sort of memory as a source material for the imagery, and there's often something I'm exploring there, which are difficult questions, I think, for me to ask. That's why the poem is happening in the first place for me. And so the way that I approach that is to go into the details, to go to what I recall seeing, or what I recall, you know, the scent or the feeling of the moment, the way the body feels in a moment like that. And that's how I start. And obviously, I mean, you know, not all biographical poems are, you know, journalistically true.
Right.
And I think a lot of the rhythm that happens in the poems is from, I compose a lot when I'm walking.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And my mind is wandering. And so a lot of, especially the poems in this book, came from just walking around with a poem and being with it and wondering, you know, where's this going to go, and what's going to close this, and coming across, you know, like a hawk flying around, or just sort of where where the wandering in both physically and in my mind lead me.
So you're saying you're walking around composing these poems. Are you saying that the rhythm of your walk gets into the poem, or are you writing things down when you're walking, or you're writing in your head, or
sometimes both. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely the crazy woman with the notebook. So if you see
Renee coming, you better get out of the way.
Yeah, you might end up in a poem.
Okay. Huh, that's interesting. Huh. Because, you know, I've heard of people who compose while driving, which is equally dangerous.
Sounds dangerous.
But walking. All right. Okay. Could you read more poems?
Sure. I guess we'll go to one of the poems that somebody found themselves in, or maybe never has heard this, but I live in Mount Washington. I take the incline a lot, and that's sort of where this poem takes place. It's called Good Friday, and it's from another cycle of poems in the book of sort of strangers I encounter on Holy Week days from the Christian Holy Week. Good Friday. His gut lurches inertial as the cable car jolts into motion. Got some ebonic graffiti here. Fingertip traces calligraphic dips in whisper-fine brush strokes on window. Sanskrit superimposed over ironwork, over foliage. Wires coiled in cable helix, fitted to cast iron sheaves, grind steel rails round in increments thinner than black creases in his knuckles as he scratches stubborn film the shade of breath on glass. Dunno what it says, but you can just tell. His mouth smells like wet iron. Those boneheads, he's lucky to have opposable thumbs. I forget that chemical they use to etch into glass. You can't get that off. At passing points, both cars counterbalance, weightless, freed from the ratchet's muscular heave against gravity. Well, it's definitely gang-related. He touches the descender of an embellished G. They're putting someone under. That poem reminded me that a lot of the imagery also comes from sort of research that I do for poems. I wanted to write about the machinery of the incline, and so I ended up reading a lot about it and finding out what things like sheaves are. Mm-hmm. This is called Learn to Swallow. Shot glass filled past 30, past 40, meniscus. I learned to swallow quick. Mask grimace, trick is to expect the taste, stagger, brace against the nearest smooth surface. Fishnet, oil-slick lips. Black stilettos echo off tile, throaty lotion thick on fresh, shaved thighs. You hiss, shh, those vents pick up everything, arch your back. I mouth silent French consonants. You picture a baseball, count the laces, not to come first. Shots are not, rape fantasies in the basement. Dim-lit, B-movie backdrop. Blue bubbling lava, faint hallucinogenic radiation, graceless denouement, when I don't want to, and you? Sanitize a razor and candle flame. Praying mantis, our voyeur, on window screen, her mate, feeds eggs in her gut. Steel splits my index tip, not offering, not initiate. My fist-sized heart forces out on your rough tongue, red, ferric. This poem is called Inherit. After I hit her, unprovoked, I left the hotel and crossed the bridge over dunes that seethed frog's sex-heavy trill into the windstorm tunnel where I crouched, body braced against blind force, as though the blow I'd struck sustained across the black void and broke over me, its impact diffused into singeing grains that choked air opaque and ate waves static whole. The hull of my ribcage drained adrenaline's animal song. Before I shoved her through the door, she stood in the threshold, wood grain, resolved crisp musculature. My pupils bloomed black in the dust-flecked mirror where your features flared through mine, slouch half-prowl, jaw a fist, fists, thick knots, your teeth in my sockets, keening. So if you lace my blood, like a drug. Then this was a clean high, so clear I could see myself in it.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Renee Alberts. She's reading some poems from her new book, which is entitled No Water, just published by Speed and Briscoe Books. I want to ask you about going into the difficult. You mentioned that previously about when you're sitting down to write, that sometimes you are motivated by going towards the difficult and writing into it. You can correct me, you know, make it make sense. But something like that, that you are begin the poem by going in that direction. And I think a lot of people in their lives avoid the difficult. So as a poet, can you talk about the writing process of going to get inside that difficult?
Yeah. I think that I myself really avoided that in my writing for a long time, to the point where it became largely because I was really intimidated by the idea of writing about my family, until it became oppressive in my writing and it was sort of not producing anything that was satisfying to me at all. And I had to give myself permission to go there. And I think that to go into it in a poem is to sort of create a space. I really do feel like the poems become a space that I can, once they're done, once they're formed, a space that I can go through the moment instead of being stuck there, really. And I think that it's important to go to those places to ask and look for the answers to questions about ourselves. It's one thing, I think, to go into a moment where you feel victimized and sort of use the artwork as your place to get your last word. And I was really careful not to do that. Mm-hmm. I was interested in sort of seeking out other questions like, you know, what are we made of? And things about maybe innocence or culpability.
Mm-hmm. So large questions.
Yeah.
What are we made of? I mean, that's ambitious. But great. So you're talking about the poem as a path of discovery rather than starting out with a motive as a writer, right?
Right.
For those maybe younger or newer writers out there who are afraid to go towards that difficult material, what could you say to them to encourage them about that?
Well, I should say that I've been really lucky to have a really supportive family. But when I had the group of poems and I wasn't sure how supportive they would be, I did give them to my mother, and I had to ask myself what I would do if she wasn't all right with it. But I had already made the decision that this work was important to me. And I think that that's what, if I'm in any position to give advice, I would say you just have to give yourself permission to explore it and maybe put aside the questions of what will people think if they read this. Because if there are important things to seek out for you, then it's something that you need to write.
Right, right. Good. And you know, you have a right to write whatever you want.
Sure, you got to own your own experiences and your own life, your voice.
Yeah. Okay. Can you read some more, please?
Sure. Let's see. This is called Comas. Last year, late summer, I buried end-of-season fruits gone rotten on vines. They slept under milk thistle and bindweed all fall, all winter, as blind worms churned them into tunnels to feed spring seeds. This is how women keep secrets. Until their husks crack, white tentacles that fractal through shadow, deeper to water. This is called Cloth Mother, Wire Mother, and the title comes from a series of experiments done on monkeys in the 1950s by a scientist named Harlow. And he would separate these baby monkeys from their mothers and then offer them the choice of these two surrogates. And one was made of chicken wire and one was made of terry cloth. And they either would or wouldn't have milk. And then they would sort of frighten the animals and see which one they went to, which, you know, raises some ethical questions. But
yeah, I guess so.
He was pretty evil, this guy. But he published his results, ironically enough, in an address entitled The Nature of Love. But I liked that idea of the cloth mother and the wire mother. One. Mother, I'm reminded of you today, when the weather turns on us, to still chlorophyll in nodding daffodils' veins, while cherry tree petals ferment in puddles, flat as sloughed skin cells. Two. My mother can gouge the heart out of a cabbage with one deft push of her thumbs after she bashes its core against the counter in a blow that rattles the blind three-tined forks asleep in their dark drawers. When her contractions time 20, 19, 15 minutes apart, she drives herself to the hospital in the turning lane, sounding her horn, furious trumpeter, stupefying gridlocked commuters. Three. We are meat, coats, homes.
There's such a great sense of sound in your work. Is that something that that you come up with in revision, or is that something like when you're walking around getting your poems that, I mean, does sound ever drive the poem from the beginning for you?
It does in some cases, but I've come to poetry a lot through reading it. I mentioned the poet Jason Kieran earlier. He used to have a poetry reading, just the sort of pickup poetry reading that happened outside the library in Squirrel Hill. And we would just sit around in a circle and read our poems. And then through that, I came to slam poetry, which really was a good tool for me in understanding how to find the sound in a poem. And Nikki Allen, who's a poet friend of mine who helped to edit the book, would often point out sound, things that happened when I was writing that I wasn't even aware of. Mm-hmm. And so I think that I've internalized it a lot. I'm going to read one called I'm an Almost. I come through shadow-tinted windows. The armed guard checks my name against her clipboard and buzzes me through whirring detectors to an elevator that smells like hard-boiled eggs. Behind glass, a baby cries, or a small machine's motor starts. Outside, my parking meter lets out time incrementally, like a lung leaks air. I keep my coat on. Seats fill with women. Our gazes leave tracers that grid the air like an action movie scene when the sexy hero suspends on a ripcord into a dark inner room latticed with motion-sensing lasers, and he cannot touch the walls, and he cannot touch the red line lights. Until a woman calls my name, and the web casts itself to the floor. She holds open the door, tells me, "Take off your jeans and panties," and hands me a paper shawl. I go in a Dixie cup, with my first name misspelled on it in dry Sharpie, and wash my hands with slimy pink soap until a nurse knocks on the door to ask if I'm still in there. There is nothing in the room I want to touch. This poem is called Grace. With knives his mother bought me for Christmas, I sliced poblanos, tomatoes, tofu, mushrooms. My lover speeds north from Tennessee, while our meal sputters in sun-colored oil. The wine breathes. A bell pepper lifts with strange heft. I have the body, blade scrapes crisp meat. Inside, four fetal peppers latch to each chamber of red cave. When I thumb them, they wiggle like loose teeth, fused to mother fruit, uterus, texture of human skin, river surface. Seed clusters fasten to foamy contours, red flesh glows in flickering stove light. The new green pepper's hollow centers house pinpoint seeds as, deep in my belly, blue pulp churns, spores drift, oblivious to any gravity but the pulse and tide of heartbeat. Pepper slices stick to the glinting knife, juices slick, over cutting board and countertop and palm. This is called Orb Weaver, which is a kind of spider that lives around here. Orb Weaver. My mother's arachnophobia releases me. Now an eight-legged star hangs from dragline anchored to corners of my living room window. I leave the light on at night as bait. Bumblebee tangles with net, veined wings mounted on steel thread. All its weight and force thrashes against the glue of trap. Quick work of sharp legs wraps shroud, cocoon, body bag. Her body pulses as she feeds, honey, breast milk, blood. I don't throw the switch or draw the shade. I used to sneer as my first lover pulled off each mosquito leg, then dropped the rest into the web.
That's the poetry of Renee Alberts. Thank you so much, Renee.
Thank you for having me.
That was wonderful. I want to mention again that your event at your Inner Vagabond Coffee House on April 22nd, Renee will be reading with some other people. So please check that out on Renee's website. It's animalprayer.com. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP.